Tonight was the big blood and gut show from Greensboro. AEW 10 days out from the Full Gear pay-per-view put together tonight. It's annual blood and gut show, usually not this late in the year. This is the first time we've gotten it in November, which means that in this month, actually in a 2.5 week span of time, we are going to get two double ring cage matches, two in AEW that we got tonight. We have two coming up in WWE in a few weeks. And those matches are going to look very different than the ones that we had here tonight on this show, because these are two companies that treat violence in a very different way. And if you come into a show like this, you know exactly what to expect. When AEW does blood and guts, they give you blood and guts. Sometimes they give you too much blood and guts. Tonight was a good example of that, because we had a lot of blood spilled in these matches. We had the first ever women's blood and guts match, and it really felt to me, when that match was over, it felt like these women got together and said, you know what, this is the first, and maybe, you know, Tony Khan or maybe other people feel like, oh, we shouldn't have a blood and guts match, so let's go out there and show them. Let's go out there and prove why we deserve to have a blood and guts match, and hopefully we'll have them from here on out each year when they do this show, because they look extra motivated out there to go out and put on what ended up being a memorable first outing for them in Blood and Guts, to the point where in the opening 3 or 4 minutes of the match, we had Sky Blue, who must have hit a gusher. She pulled an Eddie Guerrero here. And in the opening minutes of this match, this woman, she bled so much. She's not a big woman to begin with. She's a tiny woman. And she bled buckets of blood to the point where I knew they were going to go at least 40 minutes. And when you're bleeding that much, that early in the match, it becomes dangerous. I was actually worried for her. But you know from that moment, when you're watching that match, okay, this is going to be one of those nights. And that's what it turned out to be. The thing that my big takeaway from these blood and guts matches, in particular on the finish of both matches, if you pay attention to what they did in the finish, storytelling. For all of the blood and the violence and the gore and the plunder and the big spots and everything that you see in these matches, which gets tiresome, because that's how I felt watching the main event. Like, we had gotten too much, and it was like, all right. Like, now you've reached the point where it's like, all right, I think you're going a little overboard here. But it all comes down to storytelling. And you look at what they did in the women's match. And the way they did that finish, where the heels end up getting the win, just as I expected. The heels win on the women's side, the babyfaces win on the men's side. But it came down to storytelling. Megan Bain, Marina Shafir, Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa, what do they have in common? They have a match coming up soon in the women's tag team title tournament. They're telling that story. In the men's main event, what have I been saying for weeks? They are going to continue the issue with Darby Allin and Jon Moxley. If we are getting Darby and Moxley, Darby and the Death Riders again, there has to be a reason for it. It has to be a case where Jon Moxley is going to fail yet again. That has to be the real story coming out of the men's blood and guts match. It's not just that the heels have to go down, it's Jon Moxley has to go down. And if they tell that story any other way, then I don't think it's a story worth telling. I think it's a big mistake. And what did they do in the main event? Not only did the Death Riders come out on the losing end of things, when it really was looking like they might give them the win, it was Jon Moxley. At the end of all of this, it was Jon Moxley tapping out to Kyle O'Reilly. And I like that. I wasn't expecting it, but I should have been, because Moxley and Kyle have had a couple of matches in recent weeks. And the story has been that Jon Moxley panics every time he's in a situation where, you know, he might have to submit, especially after what happened to WrestleDream. He doesn't want that to happen again. So he cheats and he punches the referee, does all kinds of shit to try to avoid it. That's been the story for weeks now going into this show. It should not have been a surprise that of all the people in this match, Kyle O'Reilly would be the one who in the end gets the MVP treatment and actually taps out Jon Moxley to win it for Darby and the conglomeration. I like the finishes in both matches, and I think the outcomes were the correct outcomes. As far as all the crazy shit that we saw during the course of these matches, we will get into it as we go along here in the review. There was stuff that I didn't care for. I will tell you, as I sit here right now, and again, the show just ended not that long ago. Maybe I'll feel differently as the days go on and I reflect back on all the shit that I sat through tonight. But as I sit here right now, if I had to pick a favorite between the two matches, I go with the women's match, just overall. And lengthwise, they were very similar. Both matches went almost an hour. I actually think the main event did not need to go as long. The main event went 54 minutes. They gave that match almost a full hour. It did not need to go the full hour. But I tend to lean towards the women's match. I found myself liking the finish to the main event more, but the body of the match, they lost me during the main event. I don't know if it was just, not even just the length, it was the first half of that match, I was bored. And it picked up nicely in the closing minutes, but I really wasn't a big fan of large chunks of that main event. I didn't feel that way during the women's match. So it's kind of a weird thing where I give the edge to the main event on the finish, but overall, I think I have to give the slight edge to the women's match. I thought the women did a hell of a job in that match tonight. And then sandwiched in between, those were not the only matches here on this show. We had Hangman Page, the AEW World Champion. He was not defending his title, but he was in a Falls Count Anywhere match against Powerhouse Hobbs. One last roadblock for him. Although I think he's wrestling Shibata, but the last big roadblock for him on the road to full gear. And we got an appearance by Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, who's looking really good. You know, for a guy who's 72 years old, going on 73, and you're a pro wrestler. First of all, a lot of pro wrestlers from that era don't necessarily make it into their 70s, but a lot of them are all crippled up and they move around and it's painful to watch. You take bumps for years and years. That's what happens, especially on those old rings. Ricky's looking pretty good. Ricky is looking pretty good. I will never complain about a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat appearance, especially in Greensboro. A lot of history for him in Greensboro. I will say this. Always good to see the steamer in Greensboro. I would much rather see the steamer in Greensboro than in Cleveland. And on that note, this is your AEW Dynamite Blood and Guts review. It is Wednesday, November 12th, 2025. I am the Solemn Monster. It is another Wednesday, and we are celebrating 18 years. I really undercut myself there. 18 years of the Sound Off all November long. So I am very happy that you are with me here tonight. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. We had a whole bunch of them come in earlier in the night. So I will be going through them. You'll see them popping up on your screen. We do have a modest goal in the chat. But again, the goal is still running for a brand new episode of RSPW Rewind, which you will be getting if we hit that goal, plus bonus Be the Booker. So that is posted in the chat if you are interested. Let's get into this match here. Shout out to Aaron. Aaron Locke is with us tonight. Apparently, locks don't really mean much here in AEW when it comes to the blood and guts matches. I don't even know why they bother having the door shut. They may as well keep the doors wide open. They have a top on the cage. That was one of the things that actually bugged the shit out of me tonight about these matches, especially the men's match. People just coming in and out, as they see fit. Then when they finally do lock the door, they just clip the lock and go outside anyway. What's the fucking point? What is the point of having a top on the cage? It's like one of the things that I like about these matches compared to the War Games matches that WWE does, because they have no top on those cages because they got to do their big spots, you know, off the top. Well, they have a top on this one, but what's the fucking point if people are coming in and out of the cage as they please? We had that all night long. We'll start with the women's match, though. We'll start from the very beginning here. We had the first ever women's blood and guts match. Two women enter the cage. They have 1 5-minute period to start. Every few minutes, another woman enters. They didn't say how many minutes. They just said every few minutes. Evidently, it was changing throughout the night, but it was more like 2 minutes for all of the remaining entrants. The match, though, does not, and this is the way WWE works as well, the match does not officially begin. The match beyond does not begin until all of the participants, in this case, there were 12 women. We had 10 men in the main event, 12 women here in this match. Once everybody is out, The bell rings, and then the match officially begins. And at that point, it is submission or surrender. There are no pinfalls here in this match. So the heels won the advantage when Tekla beat Harley Cameron. This was on Collision. Of course, everyone needs to have a weapon when they come to the ring. This is how these matches are done these days. So everyone has to have some toys. Sky Blue was out first. She had a kendo stick wrapped in barbed wire. She was followed out by Willow Nightingale with a trash can lid. And as I said before, in the first not even five minutes, but the opening period of this match, Sky Blue was busted open. And when I tell you that she was busted open, and it wasn't even anything extreme. I mean, she basically had her face... she was launched, not even that hard, but she was launched into the side of the cage. And they kept the camera for a while on Willow while Sky Blue went to work to do what she was going to be doing. And when they got the camera back on her, she looked like she hit just the right spot or wrong spot, depending on how you look at it. But she was bleeding like a fucking sieve, to the point where she had to keep going like this to brush all of the blood out of her eyes because she couldn't see. So I don't even think Crimson Mask is, it doesn't really do justice to what this woman did to herself here in these opening minutes. And again, it's dangerous because you know this match is going to go long. I think back to that Survivor Series match back in 2003. They had Undertaker and Vince McMahon. And I don't know how long the match was. It probably went 20, 30 minutes, but I think Vince got cut open, cut himself open in the opening like 3 minutes of the match. And that also was like a really bad blade job. And he was bleeding all over the place. And he was a lot older than Sky Blue is. But when you're going to be out there for that long, that can't be safe. You know, when you're bleeding that much over an extended period of time. Thankfully for her, Julia Hart was into the match next. And shockingly, she did not wait for a weapon before she got into the cage to help her partner. And for the record, if you were wondering, they were coming out from the back, which I think is the way it's worked before. When the countdown ends, the next entrant into the match comes out from the back. This is not like the way WWE does them, where they have the shark cages on stage. Here, the countdown ends, and they just come out either through the crowd or the back or wherever they're coming from. So they teamed up on Willow for a little bit before Harley Cameron made her way out for the babyfaces. They went to a break, and as soon as they came back from the break, Willow pounced Julia, and then it was time for a new entrant. It was time for the Toxic Spider. Tekla made her way out to the ring. So the entire Triangle of Madness is out there now. Tekla, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue. She pulled a leather belt off from around her boot. She started lashing the baby faces with it. Jamie Hayter was out next, and she had a sack in her hand with thumbtacks in it, which looked like it accidentally split open. To me, that I don't think that they were intending to have the tacks fall on the floor as quickly as they did when she entered. I don't know what happened. I don't know if she accidentally, turned it over. If there was a hole in the bag, I don't know. But there were some tacks. Not like they all fell out. But there were enough tacks on the mat where Excalibur had to acknowledge it. They're like, what is that? Oh, that looks like thumbtacks. But it was a smattering of thumbtacks. So Hayter got a hold of the barbed wire kendo stick. She started going to town with it. Next out was Megan Bain, the Megasis, who, unlike Jamie Hayter, is still in this women's tag team title tournament. She was escorted to the ring by Penelope Ford with a chair in her hand and her arm in a sling. As soon as Megan got into the ring without the chair, she didn't bring the chair in with her, she took down Jamie with a drop kick. Harley hit Bane in the back with a trash can lid. All that did was piss off Megan Bane. So Bane scooped her up and slammed her onto the lid. Chris Statlander was in next, the AEW Women's World Champion. Came out with a pool cue that she broke across Harley's back. Was it Harley or Megan? I don't remember who it was now, but she broke the pool cue across their back. Queen Aminata, I will point out, was out there. She followed Jamie out to the ring. She was out there in a neck brace. She chased Penelope Ford to the back. Well, you talk about the walking wounded. Penelope Ford walks out there. She's got her arm in a sling. She was originally supposed to be in this match, but she's injured. Queen Aminata comes out. She looks like she was in a car accident. She's got a big neck brace around her neck. She also was supposed to be in this match, but she got hurt. So she got bounced out. And so they basically cancel each other out. They go to the back. We don't see them again. Statlander still had her women's championship wrapped around her waist, even a couple of minutes after she got into the ring. Finally, she took it off. And you could see Megan Bain in her back. She's standing there. And she has multiple thumbtacks stuck in her back. See, even like a small amount of thumbtacks just littered on the mat. Because that ring they were all fighting, and that's where all the thumbtacks spilled out into. And it's like, you could just be taking a bump, not even thinking about it. And it's like, fuck. You got like six thumbtacks now stuck in your back. I don't even know if she felt it, honestly. You're probably out there. The adrenaline is going. You're all pumped up. Who the hell even knows if she... I mean, she probably did, but she had them just stuck in her back like it was nothing. So they cut to a second commercial break, 25 minutes into this show. When they came back, Harley was scaling one of the support beams, like the truss. She was scaling it to get away from Megan Bain, who got knocked down to the mat, back into the ring with the tacks in it. So then it was time. It was time for the CEO. 12 belts Mercedes, the TBS champion, the number one contender for the AW Women's World Championship, Mercedes Moné. She was out to the ring next. She had the TBS title around her waist, but they flash back to ringside, right in front of the cage. There's a table set up. All of her other belts are either sitting on the table, it's like a Thanksgiving feast, or there were some dudes standing there that had the belts over their shoulder. And on the table was a bucket with a bottle of champagne in it. So Mercedes comes down and she stops at the table. She acknowledges all of her championships. I think she took a sip maybe of the champagne. She's in no great rush to get into this ring here. But then she got into the ring, went to work, multiple meteors. Statlander caught her. She laid her women's world title in the center of the ring. She was going to deliver either a Wednesday Night Fever or a Tombstone Piledriver onto the belt. Mercedes, though, countered out of it, hit a tornado DDT onto the belt. And then she posed with what may be, for her, title number 13. If she is successful at Full Gear, actually 14. It could be championship number 14, depending on what happens at the House of Glory show this Saturday. She may be going into Full Gear looking for number 14, not number 13. So then she left the cage, and she brought a bunch of her belts into the ring, and she's passing her belts out to her teammates to use as weapons. Finally, a use for all of these championships. She's passing them out like candy. So they start using them on the baby faces. And by the way, that wasn't even all of them. There were still belts outside the ring that were not being used. And at this point, I looked and I noticed that half of Megan Bain's face was covered in blood. I didn't even see how it happened, but half of her face was covered in blood. Mina Shirakawa was out to the ring next. She had a barbed wire baseball bat. So we had a barbed wire kendo stick. Now we have a barbed wire baseball bat. Tell you, they had all their weapons here in this match. So she got the spot that was supposed to go to Queen Aminata. That's how Mina ended up in this match. So now Statlander is busted wide open as well. Marina Shafir, she got her own music as she entered through the crowd as the final entrant here for the heels. She pulled Statlander out of the cage to the floor outside. And then she pulled, I guess from under the ring, I don't know, but she pulled out a bed of fucking nails, which we have seen Jon Moxley use before. She pulls out a bed of nails, like right next to where the announcers are sitting. It's like this, it's not terribly big, but it's still a bed of nails. So she pulls it out. Shafir knocks Statlander backwards, and she lands on top of the bed of nails. So then Shafir gets into the cage just in time for the final countdown, and I don't mean Bryan Danielson's music, but the final countdown here for this match and the arrival of Timeless Toni Storm. So she got into the ring. She had a fistful of pearls. She had some pearl necklaces in her hand, and she was wrapping her fist in them, and she was using that as a weapon. She also, before she got into the cage, she went over to that table outside, and she grabbed the champagne bucket with the bottle, and she brought that into the cage with her. So she was entrant number 12, which means that now the match beyond can begin. Blood and Guts is now officially underway. Submission or surrender. That is the only way for this match to end. One fall to a finish. Enough blood, by the way. The match just now officially started, and we were probably, I don't know, at least 30, maybe 35 minutes into this. Enough blood had already been spilled to fill up an entire blood bank. Tony taped up her hands, and then she broke the champagne bottle and she dipped her fists in the broken glass. They went to a third commercial break, and as soon as they came back, Hayter was on the ropes, and she had Sky Blue up in a powerbomb position. And she powerbombs her onto a table in the ring. Not through the table, because the table did not break. It bent, but it did not break. So Jamie then jumped off the middle rope with an elbow drop. Still, the table did not totally break. It was bending. It was bending a little bit more, but it still was not broken. So Mercedes grabbed Tony. She kissed her. This is her opponent in full gear. She just grabbed her and full-on kissed her right on the lips. I don't think she had that woman's consent when she did that. Nobody's going to say a word. I'm just saying. So she kisses Tony, or she kisses Statlander, I should say. And at that point, she got her up for the moneymaker. She planted, actually it was Tony Storm. She planted Tony Storm. I'm getting all my women confused here because there were so many of them in this match. Fucking 12 of them here in this match. Storm goes down to the moneymaker. Then she catches Statlander. That's what it was. I got the two spots mixed up. She catches Statlander with a backstabber. That's what it was. But now Harley Cameron is there, and she has the puppet. She has Minnie Monet in a blood and guts match. So Mercedes grabs the puppet. She throws it away. Everybody boos. Harley, though, now has brass knucks. And with one shot, she knocks out Mercedes. One shot to the face. After that, Julia and Tekla, they went to opposite sides of the ring. And this I have not seen before because this is the first time we have the women in Blood and Guts. And I don't think there's any man that they have that would have been in that men's Blood and Guts match. Even Darby, frankly, who would have been able to fit through. But what they did here was they had Tekla go to one side. And then they had Julia go to the other. And they each crawled through one of the openings in that giant metal truss that they have on either side of the ring. They crawled through one of the holes, one of the spaces, out to the floor. So now they're on the outside of the cage. Referee Mike Posey is outside. Now they're in front of the cage. He is trying to tell Julia, get back in the ring. He did not see Tekla doing her spider pose behind him. And when he turns around, she speared him to the ground. So then they got possession of the key to the cage. And they unlocked the door. Mercedes went to go leave. Hayter, though, came over to stop her. And so Jamie got sent through the doorway. And man, she took this fucking ridiculous bump out through the door, landed on the steps hard, and rolled down the steps. So now she's outside on the floor. And Harley ended up outside. Statlander ended up outside the same way. Mercedes started climbing one of the trusses to get away from Statlander. Christo followed her. Got her on her shoulder. They didn't make it up that far. But she got Mercedes on her shoulders. Now that table was out there. That table with all of Mercedes' belts, that was still out there. Right below where they were. And so Statlander delivers a Samoan drop to Mercedes through the table, through whatever belts were left on the table. And that was basically the last we saw of them and the last we saw of Mercedes for the remainder of this match. Back in the cage, Tony used a white high heel shoe. A lot of history there with that high heel shoe. Watch for the shoe. She used the high heel shoe as a weapon. She poured what was left of the broken glass from the bucket out right in the middle of the ring. And she DDT'd Marina Shafir onto the glass. And I should point out to you that Marina Shafir had no shoes on. When Marina Shafir came through the crowd and came to the cage, she initially had combat boots on. One of the first things she did when she got down to the ring was she took the boots off. So she just had her feet taped up. She was just in her bare feet. So she is in this ring now, and there are attacks on the mat. There is broken glass strewn just all over the mat. And this woman is walking around this ring in her bare feet like she's fucking John McClane in Die Hard with the broken glass on the floor. Tony grabs a framed mirror. I don't know where this came from. She grabs a framed mirror and she hands it to Marina. Now, Marina is seated in the corner and she hands it to Shafir. So she backs up and she's going to come charging in. Tony comes charging in. Marina gets back to her feet, though, and she shatters the mirror right across Tony's face. And this thing just exploded. Glass everywhere. Megan Bain took a superplex from Willow in between both of the rings. So she landed right on the aprons, which, of course, is the hardest part of the ring. I'm sure that didn't feel too good. So now she rolls into the ring where all the chaos is happening and all the broken glass and everything. She rolls over now into the ring. And Mina Shirakawa begins to batter Megan Bain with the barbed wire baseball bat. She then applied, and I've never seen this before, she applied a barbed wire bat-assisted figure four leg lock. And for a moment, I thought that they might actually have Megan Bain submit. Just for a fleeting moment, I said, first of all, that would be very dumb. That would be very stupid if they did that. But it's a barbed wire bat-assisted figure four leg lock. You know what? Like, if she was going to submit, at least it's a barbed wire baseball bat. But I was like, you can't have her submit. So I'm waiting to see, like, how is this going to get broken up here? Like, what are they going to do? And sure enough, Marina Shafir, she stomps on the broken glass with her bare feet. And then she goes and stomps on Mina's chest to break the hold. Well, that is certainly one way to break a hold. Stomps on this woman with whatever glass was on the bottom of her foot. Just fucking hell. And as all three members of the... And this is the finish here. As all three members... I don't even know what happened to Willow now that I think about it. Willow... I don't recall Willow taking some big bump. I don't think they did anything terribly... you know, violent to her. So I don't know where she was. If she was just kind of laying there watching this, that was kind of dumb. But I just realized I lost track of where she was. But in that first ring, all three members of the Triangle of Madness, they have Toni Storm down. She's on her knees and they're forcing her to watch what is about to happen here. And Marina Shafir locks on a front face sleeper hold as Megan Benton, she locks this on Mina. So she's laying there. Mina is basically face down on top of Marina, but she's locked in this choke. And Megan Bain has what I believe was the TBS championship. And repeatedly and very hard, she is whipping Mina across the back. And Mina looks like she's dead. Couldn't really tell from that angle if she was even conscious at this point. But she is just whipping her repeatedly with this TBS title at least three or four times. These heavy shots. And you see Tony is there and she's crying. She can't, like, she's being held by these three women and she can't do anything to help her tag team partner and this woman that she loves. And she just realizes that there's nothing she could do. And then finally she can take no more and she surrenders. She surrenders to save her partner. And with that, the heels win the first ever women's blood and guts match. So... wow, they went 45 minutes, so they gave them a lot of time here. This was the first one for the women. It did feel like they all said, look, we have something to prove here. We have to make this first one memorable. We have to do something special, violent, lots of blood. I'm sure that was part of it. We'll have Sky Blue bleed in the first 3 minutes of the match, right? That was probably the most memorable part of the entire match. Poor Sky Blue, just bleeding the whole time. But it was very clear that they went in there with, you know, the intent to have as memorable a match as they could. And to that end, I think they succeeded. You know, how do you make people remember this when you know there's a men's blood and guts match coming up in the main event and there's going to be all kinds of insanity and blood and violence in that match? They did the best they could. And I thought that as far as blood and guts matches go... it is called Blood and Guts. Because I know there's going to be a lot of divided opinion about this match and this whole show. We talk about this every year. This is not everyone's preference. This is not the kind of match that everyone is going to be a fan of. I myself am not a fan of all the shit that they do in these matches. Some of it's fine. Some of it, I think, is very stupid, and it doesn't really move me. It doesn't do anything for me. But you cannot sit here and go, well, why are they doing this? And, oh, there's blood. And yeah, well, it's fucking blood and guts. The one thing you cannot say is that you don't know what to expect going into the show. So to that end, they delivered on the blood and guts, exactly what was advertised here in this match. You got plenty of it. They did not skimp on it here in the women's match. So if that's what you're looking for, and that's what you were hoping to see in this match, then boy, was this the match for you, because they gave you a lot of it here in this match. I still feel like they rely too heavily, and this is not just an AEW problem, but they did it here on this show. There's an over-reliance, and I understand it's no disqualification, anything goes, so you could technically bring anything you want, you know, into the cage. But there's just an over-reliance now on everybody has to have a weapon when they come in. It's just like a prerequisite now that you have to bring, and it's usually the same shit, but you got to bring something into the cage with it. I just think it's very lazy when you have everybody doing it in these men and women in both matches. Everybody's doing it. I just think, to me, that's, it's just a very, very tired thing, but it's expected from both companies at this point. One thing I liked about the way that AEW does these matches as compared to the way WWE does is that they put a top on the cage. And the point of that is you're locked inside. It's the whole point of when Hell in a Cell first debuted, right? Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. There's a lot of heat there between those two. They want those guys locked in that cage because the objective there is not to escape the cage, which was traditionally how WWF cage matches were done. In this case, you're trapping them in there. There's nowhere to go. And that's how the old War Games matches were done. This whole concept was born out of those original War Games matches. And you had it on the show tonight. Like, one thing Tony Khan loves to do is talk about the old days. Reminisce about the old days on TBS and Mid-Atlantic and Greensboro, right? Tony is a savant when it comes to wrestling history, so he knows. That was the whole point of that. That's why he had a top on the cage. So I like that AEW maintained that. They have, you know, a top on their cages here. But when you have people who are escaping the cage and going outside, multiple people, to me, it just defeats the whole purpose. If you want to build to like one big spot in a match like this where two people end up outside, you could do something like that. But it just gets ridiculous when, you know, a bunch of people just, the door opens and a bunch of people end up outside the cage and they're doing all kinds of table spots and all kinds of spots out on the floor. Yeah, you know, because it just defeats the purpose of having the top on that cage in the first place. Now, of course, I say this, and I mentioned the first Hell in a Cell where the two of them escaped the cage. So I realize that it's just always been done that way. But I just think tonight, maybe because we had two of them, we saw so much of that between the men and the women. I don't know, maybe if we just had one, it wouldn't have bothered me as much. But I saw it so many times tonight. It was even worse in the men's match that after a while, it's like, this is just silly. But that is one thing I like about these, generally speaking, is that they have the top on there, because to me, that's the way, you know, War Games, blood and guts, that's the way that that's supposed to be. Sky Blue, I know people are going to say Sky Blue is one of the MVPs of the match. You could say that. I think it's just more people saw her bleeding so much that it made her stand out more. And she was fine. If I had to pick an MVP in this match, though, I would go with Megan Bain. I just think she stood out more than most. And she was doing a lot of the big power spots and, you know, some big spots in the match. So I like Megan Bain. If I had to kind of boil it down to one person who stood out to me, maybe more than any other in this match, I don't know that there was any one person who really outshined everybody else. I think most of the women, all of them at one point or another, Sky Blue, Tekla, Mercedes, Statlander, Mina, everybody, had a chance to shine here in this match. At one point, or even Harley, like at one point or another, everybody had a chance to shine. Everybody, you know, had their part. They played their part here in this match. I really like the way they did the finish. Some people may not like it. I like the way they did that finish because it plays directly into the women's tag team title tournament. Mina and Tony are wrestling Megan and Marina in the next round. That's going to be your semifinal match. So they were able to use the finish here in this match to segue directly into this next match here that we're going to be getting soon, maybe next week, in this tournament and put more heat on that match. Whereas before, it was just a match. There really was no, you know, connection between the two teams. There was no heat there. Now there is, because they forced Toni Storm to watch her friend and her partner get murdered right in front of her, to the point where she felt she had no other option but to quit and lose the match for her entire team. That's storytelling. It's very basic storytelling, but that's storytelling. So I like the way they did that finish. You know, you had three women who were holding her down. I don't know where Willow was, but so I liked it. I liked the finish, and I do believe still, I'm going to stick to my guns, that Toni and Mina are going to win the titles. I could see them going for what I would consider the upset if it was going to be Willow and Harley winning the belts. But I think when they do the match, Toni and Mina beat Megan and Marina, we probably end up with Toni and Mina against Willow and Harley. And then it could really go either way, but I'm going to stick with my original pick, sticking with Toni Storm and Mina to win the tournament. Because think about it. They both lost championships recently, right? They have nothing, as they say. Now they lost blood and guts. I think it all pays off with them winning the tag team titles. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. You know, I just had to turn the clocks back for daylight savings, which means it's getting darker earlier now. But now that the days are shorter, it's even tougher to find time each night to cook dinner, which is why I love Factor. Their chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something delicious, no matter how hectic the season gets or how short the days might feel. With Factor, you can choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, at no extra cost. Enjoy even more GLP-1-friendly meals and new Mediterranean options packed with protein and fats that are actually good for you. And for the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. For more choices to better nutrition, that's why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life. You can feel the difference no matter what your routine may be. I've had plenty of Factor meals from the first box I had delivered to my house, and I can honestly say I've never been let down by any of them. Yeah, you know, obviously I have certain dishes that I prefer over others, but I can always expect a quality meal without the hassle involved in cooking, or should I say attempting to cook for myself. And looking at some of their upcoming menu options, like, you know, for the week of November 15th, now that's a great time to try them out if you never have before. If you're looking for a keto-friendly option, check out the herb shredded chicken and butternut squash meal. If you're more calorie conscious, you can try the grilled pork chop and wild rice dish. Those are just a few of the options that they're offering. It's good to have options. Let Factor do the cooking for you. You do the eating with this exclusive offer for Solomonster listeners. Eat smart at factormeals.com/Solomonster50off and use code Solomonster50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code Solomonster50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Statlander and Mercedes were in here. They're going to have a world championship match of Full Gear. Statlander putting Mercedes through that table and leaving her laying outside is probably going to have a lot of people going, uh-oh. That's not good. That's not good for Statlander, but I would caution you, there's one more Dynamite left. They're not at Full Gear quite yet. There's still one more show left to go. I'm still thinking Statlander wins. I may end up looking like a fool for saying that, but I think she should win that match. There is one more Dynamite left to go, though. Now, when they returned from the break, the Don Callis family were in the parking lot attacking Jurassic Express. We had a brawl between the two sides. They were outside the arena in the parking lot. The Callis family B team, I should say. Because we had Mark Davis was out there, Rocky Romero was out there, Lance Archer was out there. They did have Josh Alexander out there with them. And then after taking out the Dinosaur and Jack Perry, there was a trailer there. The door to the trailer swings open and out walks Okada and the Young Bucks. And Okada's got a big smile on his face. Alexander held up Perry. He was on his knees, basically out. and he's holding up Perry's face, and he looks at the Bucks and he goes, you know, last week they sent you guys a message. Well, this week we sent one back. Don't mess with family. Don Callis was there. He told the Bucks, they all know that Kenny Omega is going to be on the show next week. So maybe you send Kenny Omega a message and you join the Don Callis family next week. Callis walked off and Okada told the Bucks, decision time. So I guess next week we'll see what the decision is. On the part of the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega is going to be back on the show next week. After this, it was the Falls Count Anywhere match. The AEW World Champion Hangman Adam Page going to be taking on Powerhouse Hobbs, one-third of the AEW Trios Champions. You know, let me go back to the women's match for a second. I mentioned Megan Bain as if I had to pick maybe like an MVP standout in the match. I will throw Marina Shafir in there with her. For me, I think it was, and funny enough, they're a tag team right now. I think Marina Shafir also should be mentioned there because they gave her some really memorable spots towards the end of the match. And she held her own. You know, again, she wasn't doing a whole lot. She was the last one in. But what she did was some of the more memorable stuff in that match, you know, especially with the glass and whatever was, you know, going on there towards the end. So, you know, I got to give her a shout because it's one of those things where she's not one of the kind of standout in-ring performers when it comes to some of the other women that they have in that division. So you don't hear me saying that very often, but I do think in this match, what they had her doing there towards the end, she probably is going to end up being one of the standouts of that match. If not, I don't want to say the MVP, but one of the standouts of that match. So give her an honorable mention. But we have Falls Count Anywhere here, Hangman and Hobbs. This was after Hobbs put Hangman through a table off the stage last week at the end of the show. World's Strongest Slam, and then they immediately announced, hey, next week there's going to be a Falls Count Anywhere match. Tony Khan just told me. And then they very quickly rushed off the air. So that's how we ended up with this match here. The story they told here was Hangman had bad ribs coming off. I don't mean bad ribs at the Chinese restaurant. He had bad ribs after what happened with that spot last week. Look, I've had bad ribs before. I just don't eat there anymore. I pick a different Chinese place now. And of course, 10 days from now, full gear, he's defending his championship against Samoa Joe. So is he biting off more than he can chew? That was the story coming into this match. Hey, Martin, thank you for the 18-year shout. I appreciate it. You should have 1 million subscribers, he says, on YouTube. Well, hey, maybe we can, I don't know that wrestling is that popular these days, but maybe we can will it into existence one day. They fought outside the ring early here with Hobbs delivering another World's Strongest Slam onto the ring apron. Then he picked him up. He slammed him on top of the announce desk, on the lid of the announce desk. And he looked over at Tony Schiavone, who was on commentary, and he yelled at Tony, "It's your fault, Schiavone." Of course, making reference to the Hangman stunt on the Halloween show. Truly one of the best segments on their show all year. And then finally, the steps were moved over. And it's just the bottom part, the flat part of the ring steps. He still is holding Hangman. And he climbs the steps, and he just slams him down on top of the steps with the World's Strongest Slam. So they go to commercial. It was all Hobbs during the break. Page got placed on the table. Hobbs tried to stand up on the announce desk, and I don't know, there was this weird gap between the edge of the announce desk and then where the actual table started. I thought there was a hole in the desk, and then I looked, and I was like, oh, there's a gap. And he was okay, but like that could have been scary, depending on how he fell, but he was fine. So he's standing there, and he's getting ready to do something. And he wanted a powerbomb. I think that's what it was. He wanted a powerbomb. Hangman hits a massive backdrop. He counters out of it into a back body drop. Hobbs is a big dude, and he went all the way over. You have to watch the way that he landed on the floor. He landed on his ass, right on his tailbone, and he fucking bounced. Like, he took a terrible fall on that bum. He'll be feeling that. He'll be lucky if he didn't. He's lucky he didn't break anything. He'll be feeling it, I'm sure, in the morning. But that wasn't the only bad bump he took here, because he got back up to his feet. Not 10 seconds later, he's over by the barricade. Hangman comes charging in. And he's going to clothesline him over the barricade. The only thing is, Hobbs, for whatever reason, he jumped up as Hangman was coming in. So he jumps up and he gets knocked over the barricade. And it's like he just went flying over the barricade. And he took another terrible landing on the concrete out in the crowd. But he was okay because he immediately popped right back up. They brawled into the crowd. Hangman took a sip of a fan's beer. He moonsaulted off. There was a railing there. He moonsaulted off the railing onto Hobbs, and Hobbs just staggers even deeper into the crowd. So it's false count anywhere. So into the crowd they go. And this is another example of, like, you guys know, I'm a fan of that stipulation. I like the false count anywhere stipulation. And I feel like in wrestling today, the major companies, they don't take full advantage of the stipulation when we get one of these matches. And they had the chance here to do some fun stuff. Maybe if they would have brawled up onto the concourse, into the backstage area, out of the building, you know, do something like that. And they didn't do it. They didn't do it. So they brawled into the crowd. That was the extent to which they traveled anywhere in the building. They just kept it to the crowd. That's actually where the match ended. So they didn't venture very far here. But they're up in the crowd. Paige tried a deadeye. Couldn't get Hobbs up. So he settled for smacking him with a trash can. Hangman got a running start. Hobbs, though, caught him and planted him through a table that just so happened to be sitting there. And he covered him only for a two count. So now the fans they're fleeing. They're getting out of the way. Something bad's about to happen. So as the fans begin to flee, as they go higher up into the crowd, Hobbs wanted a World's Strongest Slam off the balcony. So now they're over this balcony, you know, one of those entrance tunnels that the fans come in and out of. He's going to give them a World's Strongest Slam because there's tables down below. Hangman, though, fights back, gets out of it, takes his boot off, and he backs up to get a running start, backs up the steps, going to give himself a running start. He comes charging in. He smacks Hobbs in the head with the cowboy boot, and Hobbs falls backwards. And he crashes through the tables and some electrical boxes down below. And as soon as he crash lands on the tables and the boxes, sparks begin to fly. And so the old Rockin' Mankind spot from their I Quit match at the Royal Rumble. And as silly and ridiculous as it was even when they did it, you do something like that because you think it makes for a great visual. That's why you do a spot like that, right? Because otherwise, why are sparks flying? Not only did sparks fly, the lights in the arena began to flicker. Like they were going to have a power outage because of this one spot here in the crowd. So, it's ridiculous, but whatever. The sparks made for a fun visual. Paige walks down the steps. He goes over to Hobbs. He covers him, and he pins him. And just like that, Hangman Paige beats Hobbs. Maybe they went not even 15 minutes. I don't know, 13, 14 minutes maybe they went. So Paige makes his way back to ringside, but he immediately gets blindsided by Katsuyori Shibata. Samoa Joe is already in the ring with a chair, waiting. He cracks Paige in the back with it. He orders the cage to be lowered. And they lower the fucking cage. I'm like, who is he barking orders to here? That they are actually agreeing to lower the cage. Remember the ladder match? King of the Ring, 99? Stone Cold against Vince and Shane? He's reaching up for that briefcase for control of the company, and someone is raising the briefcase. Who's raising the briefcase? We know it's not the Big Boss Man. I don't know who decided to lower the cage, but the cage is starting to lower. So the cage, as that's happening, Eddie Kingston runs out. Hook runs out. They both rush the ring. Joe bails with Shibata before the cage could lock Paige in. Paige takes a microphone, and he says, if Joe wanted him in a cage, all he had to do was ask, dumbass. Said, full gear. Leave Shibata at home, and leave Hobbs at the hospital. Hangman Paige against Samoa Joe at full gear for the AEW World Championship. inside a steel cage. And Joe is furious at this development. And Eddie Kingston, Hook, and Hangman stand tall to end the segment. I didn't have an issue with the match. Yeah, the match, at first I was like, okay, this is the come down, but it really, they never let up. I mean, there was just nonstop action for those 13 minutes. They went into the crowd. They were doing some big spots. I can't really call this the come down match. We had another segment after this. That was the come down. This was a way to get the world champion on the show. Excuse me. This is a way to get Hangman on the show. He's got a title match coming up in 10 days. What do you do? Well, they were going to add a stipulation. So they had to set up an angle to get them to the cage match. Now, of course, I think it's ridiculous that you have two blood and guts matches on this show. You're giving us two gigantic supersized cage matches here on this show. And then you build to the announcement of a steel cage match coming up at Full Gear. It's kind of redundant, and it's actually a step down from the kind of cage matches that we saw here on this show, because there's no possible way they can match the level of violence in that match that we saw in these matches here tonight. So I thought that was kind of silly. Not that you can't add a stipulation. It is a rematch. So instead of doing a straight match, they want to do a stipulation match. That's fine. But of all the stipulations to do, I don't know why it had to be a cage match. But the idea is that he wants him to leave Shibata out of it, leave Hobbs out of it. But again, like, the idea that we're going to have a cage match so that nobody can get involved. Like, really, dude? Really? How stupid do you think we are? On what planet does the fucking cage keep anybody out? Like, it's just a running joke at this point. You could have picked any other stipulation. You could have done a last man standing match. You could have done any other stipulation. But we're getting another cage match. Now, they said the men's blood and guts match is coming up next, but they lied. Because after a break, Tony Schiavone was in the ring. Well, one of the rings. There were two of them. And he was putting over how great it was to be back here in Greensboro. This was the very same building they were in last year in March for Revolution when Sting had his retirement match. They had 16,000 people in the building that night. Tonight they had around 5,000 in a building much larger than that. I will say it was a very vocal 5,000, though. 5,000 for AEW these days, especially for the weekly shows, is actually a great number. Their pay-per-views, they usually do pretty well attendance-wise. I don't know what the number is up to right now for Full Gear. I'm trying to think of what the last update was. My guess is they'll end up probably with a good 8, 9, 10,000 people there in Newark. It's the weekly shows that are an issue. That's why they run these small venues. So for them to get 5,000 people for a Dynamite by today's standards is pretty good, but then you remember that it's a 20,000-seat building. But the 5,000 people who were there, they were very loud. They were very loud. They were very vocal. So anyway, he's putting over the Greensboro Coliseum. And he said, this next man made wrestling great in this building. He made wrestling great in this city here on TBS. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. So Steamboat comes down to the ring and gave a big shout out to TBS and pointed out a poster. Somebody had a poster in the crowd that had the Mount Rushmore of Greensboro. And on the poster, they had pictures of himself, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, and Sting. He wanted to tell us, though, a quick story. He was going to tell us like a Ric Flair story. So he said this story goes back to Mid-Atlantic in 1977. He was 16 months into the business, and Ric Flair went to Jim Crockett and said, you got this new kid who just came in. I like what I see, and I want to try to do something with him. But then his story was abruptly cut off when FTR's music interrupted him, and out comes Dax and Cash and Stokely Hathaway. Steamboat says, hey, I know these two guys, which is true because it was 3 years ago. He tagged with them. Steamboat's retirement match was a six-man tag. It was him and FTR on an independent show. So he was very well acquainted with these two. Stokely said, Ricky, you know, FTR? You know them, the greatest tag team alive today. He He was trying to talk through all the booze. They were trying to drown him out with booze. He introduced himself to Steamboat and said that it would be an honor for him to be in attendance. Steamboat can make it to full gear to be there live when FTR win the AEW tag team titles. Then he asked if he had Macho Man's phone number. He hasn't seen him on TikTok in a minute. Yeah, that was cringe. That was pretty cringe. So then Cash reminded the crowd about them teaming with Steamboat a few years ago. They did show some still photos from that match that I mentioned. Then Dax spoke. And Harwood said that 13 years ago, Ricky was his trainer. And he learned so much from Ricky. I guess this would have been when Ricky was with, I guess it would have been still FCW at that point. I mean, I'm trying to think what year he signed with Developmental. I'm sure he was already in Developmental at that point. And Steamboat used to work there. So, yeah. I assume that's what he's referring to. But he said 13 years ago, Ricky was his trainer. And he learned so much from him on how to... he was struggling to come up with anything that he had learned from Steamboat. Because now that I think about it, I don't think Ricky has ever said one intelligent thing in his entire life. He said, oh wait, there is one thing. Ricky said one thing that he didn't teach him is that his attitude has gone in the toilet. And Dax said, no, he goes, there is one thing that you taught me. You tell me, kid, it doesn't matter how much you make. Make sure you save your money, which is sound advice, by the way. It's not what you make, it's what you save. I know Jim Ross used to tell some of the people back then, like in Developmental, it's not about what you make, it's what you save. And I feel like you come to that kind of critical point in your career when you're that young and you're new. Either you take that advice and you start to save and invest early on, and it really will end up benefiting you in life, or it just goes in one ear and out the other. And then it's just, okay. You could make $500,000, but if you piss it all away, what does it really mean, right? What happened to Will Smith? When Will Smith first hit it big, he had the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, he made his first $1 million. As quickly as he made that first million, he spent it all. There's a very valuable lesson in that. But he said that lesson has never been more evident than today, because if he and Ric Flair had taken their own advice, they wouldn't have to be here tonight. He said he's a bigger legend now than Steamboat ever was. So Ricky went nose to nose with him. Literally, they had their noses pressed up against each other. So he wasn't backing down. Dax grabbed him, so Ricky shoved him back. Ricky said that a few years ago, he would have told the two of them to kiss his ass, but sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. He realizes that in a few months, he's going to be 73 years old. He's just going to be the smarter man today. And so he went to go leave. Cash grabbed him, though. Dax started hammering away. So Ricky taking bumps here, still at 72. Then they set up for the spike pile driver until Brodito ran out to make the save. They knocked Cash out of the ring, and then Rick or Steamboat actually got a few shots in. A few old Steamboat chops to Harwood. And this all ended with Brodito raising Steamboat's arms in the ring. So this was the come down before the main event. And I guess this was their way to try to, you know, promote the tag team title match that's coming up. At Full Gear, you got Brodito defending against FTR. I mean, as promotion goes for that match, this was pretty weak. I didn't think that the segment itself was great, but it's always great to see Ricky Steamboat. And for 72 going on 73, he's moving around pretty good. He's looking pretty good. Always good to see Steamboat. Ric Flair was supposed to be there. I don't know if Flair was there. He just didn't appear on camera. I don't know if he couldn't make the show for some reason. I don't think he was really terribly missed in this segment. He certainly wasn't going to make the segment better. I think if anything, him being out there probably would have ended up making the segment worse. So I certainly didn't object, but I do wonder if they had planned for him to be there, because just like even the things that Dax was saying when he was in the ring, he was referring to Steamboat and Flair. So it felt like it was designed for both of them to be out there. and then something happened, and maybe at the last minute, Flair just either wasn't there or they couldn't use him. That's kind of what it felt like to me. It was intended for both of them, but only Steamboat was there. But after this, it was time for the main event. It was time for the men's blood and guts match with the Death Riders and Darby Allin and the Conglomeration all involved 5-on-5. Darby Allin started for the babyfaces. Wheeler Yuta started for the heels. And it started with Darby going after him outside the ring. Yuta entered second. So Darby went after him outside. Darby went for a charge into the barricade. Yuta moved. So Yuta took control at that point. He got into the cage. And when Darby tried to get in, he slammed the door on his head. Then he dragged Darby inside. Finally, they locked the door shut behind them, although that really doesn't seem to matter in these matches. Darby did a coffin drop off the side of the cage to take Yuta down. Then he grabbed the skateboard. I forgot to mention, he brought a skateboard into the ring with him. And on the underbelly of the skateboard, they had thumbtacks that were glued to the bottom of the skateboard. So he had his tack board there with him in the ring. And he started digging those tacks into Yuta's forehead. And guess what happened? In the opening 5 minutes of this match, we had blood. Wheeler Yuta was bleeding from the forehead for the second straight blood and guts match here in the opening minutes. Orange Cassidy was in next because the babyfaces had the man advantage, which is not ideal in these matches. I mean, you can't just have the heels get the advantage every match every year, but ideally, the heels would get the advantage. The babyfaces, they have to fight from behind. You tell the underdog story. In this case, the babyfaces had the advantage because Roderick Strong had beaten Jon Moxley, I believe, by countout on Collision. So that was what earned them the man advantage. Cassidy brought his backpack into the ring with him. Then he took his own sunglasses and he broke them in half. And he smashed the pieces of them into Yuta's head. Cassidy pulled out a chain from the backpack. He wrapped it around his fist. He punched him low with it. Low as in the gut. Darby grabbed the skateboard with the tacks. He climbed the ropes and he landed across Yuta's back with it. He basically skated on his back. Daniel Garcia was in next. I think maybe the biggest surprise of the night is that Daniel Garcia did not lose for his team tonight. So Garcia came in, and not a whole lot happened at that point. So we had Jon Moxley sending the two youngest members of the Death Riders, like lambs to slaughter, here to open the match for his team. After a commercial break, Mark Briscoe was out next, or not, because they played his music, but there was no Mark Briscoe. He was nowhere to be found. So they cut to the back, and Renee is in the back, and she's trying to find out what's going on here. And she walks into their locker room, and Mark Briscoe is on the ground on his knees. He's doubled over in pain. He's holding his ribs. Again, maybe he had some bad ribs too for dinner. I don't know, but he's clearly in a state of distress here. And he's clutching his own ribs. Kyle O'Reilly is there and Roddy is there. They're trying to figure out what happened. And Roddy is like, I'll go out. And Kyle's like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, I'll go out. So even though he wasn't expecting to go out quite this early, Roderick Strong went out there instead. And he was barely out there for 30 seconds before the countdown began for the next entrant into the match, which was Claudio Castagnoli out there for the Death Riders. There was a spot here in this match where he did the giant swing on Darby Allin. Orange Cassidy had jumped on his back. I don't know if he was trying to put him in a sleeper hold or what he was trying to do here. But it didn't matter. He swung them both. He swung Darby all while Cassidy was on his back. So that made for a cool visual. Then he gorilla pressed Darby up over his head and he launched him over the ropes into the second ring. That will never get old. Roddy came up bleeding, they said, from a chair shot. I'll take their word for it. I didn't see it if it happened, but he was bleeding. Not the only one. Kyle O'Reilly entered for his team in number 4. The Death Riders had control heading into a break. And this is what I said earlier. At this point in the match, like, there were a couple cool spots, but like, I was bored. I was bored. The crowd, even the crowd, which was hot for most everything on this show, was kind of mild and lukewarm, you know, probably waiting for all the big spots. But I was just bored. And I'm like, all right, can we get on with this, please? Can we please get on with this? So they go to a commercial. They come back. John Moxley enters fourth for the Death Riders. So he is not entering last. And he brought a fork into the ring with him and immediately begins stabbing O'Reilly in the head with it and then Roddy in the head with it. Darby fires away. He does a coffin splash off the ropes like a springboard, but as he springboards off backwards, Moxley just sticks him in the back with the fork on the way down. Then we went back outside. Moxley goes back outside and he begins to collect some of the plunder from the women's match earlier. The bucket is there. It still has some broken glass inside of it. There's a piece of the frame from the broken mirror that was destroyed in the opening match. So he collects all of his toys and he brings them back into the cage with him. And I'm just like, this is so dumb. Like, how are guys just freely coming in and out of the cage here? Like, I don't want to hear, like, oh, well, the match hasn't officially begun yet, right? It's not surrender or, you know, submit or surrender or whatever it is. That hasn't started yet. So what? When you go in, they close the door. Whether they lock it or not, they have referees out there. Their job is to make sure that door stays closed. And you have the top on the cage, but people are just coming in and out of the cage. Like it's an open house. Like they're just there to take a look around, see if this is some place they might want to put, you know, an offer in for. This is not a fucking open house. It's a blood and guts match. You're in a cage. You're locked in there like animals. That's the point. Moxley's like, oh, I forgot my bucket. I guess I'll go outside and collect my bucket. It's just fucking dumb. So again, it had, still had broken shards of that frame I mentioned. It had broken shards of glass from the mirror that were still on it. And Moxley begins raking it across O'Reilly's forehead. We got a countdown again. And again, no Mark Briscoe. Renee chimed in. This time it was like she was calling in by phone. She's like fucking Lee Marshall from the WCW Nitro days. Remember those road reports? We're hearing from Renee in the closet backstage, even though she's supposed to be on location somewhere. But now Renee was in the back, and so we get a quick update from her, not on camera, but we can hear her voice. And she said that it seems like Briscoe was attacked by the Don Callis family, and so he is not going to be able, it appears, he is not going to be able to participate in this match, which means it's going to be a 5-on-4 advantage for the Death Riders. Excalibur points out that Don Callis on Collision Saturday had made Moxley an offer to take out Mark Briscoe. So I guess that's the story they're going with. Briscoe does have that match coming up with Kyle Fletcher. So meanwhile, we had broken shards of glass on the mat yet again. This time they gave Darby Allin an assisted spike pile driver onto the pile of broken glass. And at that point, Moxley picks Darby's legs up and he is dragging him through the glass. And this is what takes us into another commercial break. So that's the last image we had, okay, before the break. They come back from commercial, and what is the first thing that we see? Darby Allin. And he is hanging upside down from he has scaled to the top, the roof of the cage, and he is hanging upside down. And he drops and does a coffin drop and takes out all of the Death Riders. They all fall down. The same Darby Allin who right before the commercial break was given a spike pile driver onto a pile of broken glass and then was dragged like fucking the depths of hell, you know, like raked over the coals, and he's being dragged around the ring through the glass. And then the very next thing we see is he's hanging upside down like Spider-Man, and he's taking out all of the Death Riders because nothing matters. Nothing matters. You could give these people, you can give Darby a spike pile driver on a pile of glass lit up with kerosene. And it doesn't matter because 4 minutes later after the commercial break, he'll be right back up like nothing ever happened. So that was dumb. I would not have had that as the first thing I see coming out of the commercial break. It was very noticeable. How do we go from this to that? So anyway, Pac was out last for the Death Riders, which turned this into a handicap match because the bell rang, and that's now the official beginning, technically, of this Blood and Guts match. Submission or surrender. One fall to a finish. Now we're underway. Referee Paul Turner, they show him outside the ring. He locks the cage door as if that's going to fucking matter. Because they also showed Wheeler Yuta had the key. He had possession of the key. So again, why is he even bothering? Just leave the door open. At this point, just leave it open. Just leave it open. Kyle O'Reilly, I also noticed Kyle O'Reilly at this point also covered in blood. But wait, here comes Mark Briscoe after all. He doesn't even come out like, oh, I'm selling the rib. Like, he looks fine. He looks like nothing happened to him. So he comes out and he's got a toolbox and he's got a pair of bolt cutters, which he uses to cut the lock off the fucking door because, of course, he brings a chair into the ring with him. He chucks it at Garcia's head. Again, he looked fine to me for a guy who Renee just chimed in and told us he's so injured that, guys, it looks like he's not going to be able to participate in this match tonight. She was wrong. Briscoe threw the toolbox into the ring, but he got dragged out to the floor by Yuta. Briscoe set Yuta up on a table outside, and he looked up. He gave a glance up to the top of the cage. Garcia, though, snuck up behind him and tried to stop him, so Garcia ended up laid out across the table instead, and Briscoe made the long climb to the very top of the cage. And that's a tall cage. AW cages are very tall. This one, if I had to venture a guess, it could be a legit 12 to 15 feet, somewhere in that range. So he's standing there on top of the cage. Garcia rolls off the table, though. But Kyle O'Reilly goes outside. He locks him in a submission hold. Meanwhile, Wheeler Yuta ends up on top of the cage. And we got a yay boo slugfest between Briscoe and Yuta. Briscoe had a rope with a carabiner on the end of it. And he lowers it down to Kyle. There's like a, not a pile of chairs, but there's like a, a bunch of chairs that are all bunched up together. So the idea is that he's going to hook the chairs onto the end of this rope, and Mark is going to pull the chairs up to the top of the cage. And so he does. So he brings all these chairs up with him. He takes one chair and he slides one over to Wheeler Yuta, because we're going to have a chair battle now. And they start swinging the chairs at each other like a lightsaber battle. And Briscoe ends up winning that one. Briscoe tried for a J-driller on top of the cage. Yuta, though, countered out with a low blow. And then he smashed Briscoe in the head with a chair shot to the head, which was very dumb. And then they went to their final commercial break of the night. When they came back, Briscoe was bleeding buckets on top of the cage. And Yuta set him up for a J-driller himself. Of course, he was not able to hit the J-driller. Briscoe avoided it. He returned that low blow from earlier. And then he finally hit the J-driller himself. And they ended up back on the floor. So there was no big bump off the top of the cage. They ended up climbing down. When Gabe Kidd showed up from New Japan, the honorary Death Rider, we haven't seen him in a while. Gabe Kidd shows up and you hear the noise. Someone's got a stun gun. Now, just joking about this on TNT last night, I was like, so what are we going to see? We're going to see Staples? We're going to see a taser in this match? Yes, the answer is yes. We got both of them in this match. So he uses the stun gun on Darby Allin. And everyone, again, is, I don't know how many people were outside at this point. You almost had as many people outside as you had inside. In the ring, Moxley had a staple gun. I don't know where this came from. And he stapled Cassidy's hands inside his pockets multiple times, multiple staples. So now his hands are in his pockets and he can't take them out. Elsewhere, We go to the entranceway. Right next to the entranceway, they have set up a couple of tables. And then you have the tunnel. So Pac and Darby, they end up on top of the entranceway, on top of the tunnel. Gabe Kidd goes and he grabs some lighter fluid and he douses, and I mean douses, the tables with a good amount of it. And you probably should have expected that we were going to see fire in this match because we've seen Darby use fire before in this feud with Moxley and the Death Row. I was surprised they didn't do the Inferno stipulation at Wrestle Dream. That's where I thought things were headed. So, of course, we end up with fire here in this match. He sets those tables ablaze. Pac has Darby military pressed over his head, and he press slams him all the way. It was a good drop, too. He press slams him all the way off the tunnel, all the way off the entranceway, and Darby takes a bump through the tables into the fire. And you could see before the flames were fully extinguished, there was fire on his back. I'm sure he burned off a good amount of flesh. There was fire on his back. He's rolling around, you know, drop and roll. He's rolling around outside. So that was like the big bump of the match. Back inside the cage, a bloody John Moxley. He got Kyle O'Reilly in a chain-assisted crossface. Kyle, though, just looked up and flipped him off. Refused to surrender. So, and the bump that we just saw with Darby, like from this point to the very end, this was, well, you would hope it's the peak of the match because it's the finish. But this is where it's like, okay, this is where things really got good here in this match. There was a good chunk of it in the middle where, again, I just didn't care for it. I was kind of bored here by the first half. Then they were on top of the cage and you're like, okay, what crazy stunt are they going to do? And they never went off the top of the cage. They went up to the top just to climb down, which is probably for the better. But this is the part of the match where, okay, now I'm invested. Now I want to see how this finish is going to go down because in my mind, there's only one proper way that this finish should go down. I was a little worried that they were going to have O'Reilly tap out when he had the chain wrapped around his mouth. So when I saw him flip off Moxley and the crowd popped, it got this great reaction. I'm like, okay, so he's still alive. Now you have to just take care of all the other Death Riders until Moxley is all alone, because that's the whole point, right? Moxley panics when he's all alone, and then you can do the proper finish. So that's what they were getting into here. Cassidy, though, again, he had his hands stapled to his inside his pockets, rips his hands out of his pockets, and he delivers an orange punch to John Moxley. Outside the cage, Briscoe delivered a fisherman suplex to Pac off the ring steps through a table. Two more orange punches to John Moxley. Yuta got thrown through a table in the corner. Claudio popped Cassidy up for an uppercut, but instead he ate an orange punch on the way down. Moxley got knocked into the other ring, the ring with all the glass on the floor, and he was trapped in an ankle lock by Kyle O'Reilly. And again, he's laying there. You know, at Wrestle Dream, he was laying in that puddle when Darby got him in the Scorpion Deathlock. I don't know what else was in there. Was it tax too? I just remember the fish tank. I don't remember what else. There might have been broken glass in that finish also. But he's basically like swimming in the glass here, and he's got the ankle lock applied, and you know, the crowd is just waiting for the tap out. What's Moxley going to do here? Moxley gets out of it. But then Kyle transitions back into the ankle lock, but this time he gets the grapevine. He's got that leg secured. Moxley's in the middle of the ring. He's in the middle of the glass. He's got nowhere to go. All the Death Riders have been taken out. And he's struggling and he's struggling. And finally, Moxley taps out. Moxley surrenders. And the Death Riders go down. And Kyle O'Reilly, of all people, is the one who wins it for his team. And the babyfaces all celebrate in the ring. And we get the big happy ending here at the end of the show. And that right there is the finish that needed to happen here at the end of this match. It's like I've been saying all along, it had to be Moxley. Yuta surrendering, Garcia surrendering, who gives a shit? You expect them to lose in matches like this. Them losing is a cheap way out. Then you're left with Moxley, Claudio, and Pac. The story is with Jon Moxley. They've been telling this story ever since WrestleDream. At least since Wrestle, if not before, they've been telling it since WrestleDream. It always had to be Jon Moxley as the one to go down and betray his team here. They stood beside him. They fought alongside of him. Blood was spilled. All the weapons and the glass and the tacks and the barbed wire and the forks and all the bullshit. And in the end, it's their fearless leader who once again leads them right off the cliff, just like he did at All In when he lost the championship, just like he did when he quit against Darby at WrestleDream. He just did it again here in Blood and Guts. And this is the beginning of the end of the Death Riders. It has to be. They didn't do an angle when the match was over, but they didn't have to. It would have been overkill. You could save that for next week. The only thing is, next week is the final Dynamite, the go-home show. Final Dynamite before the pay-per-view. And I can't imagine that they wouldn't want Darby and or Moxley doing something at Full Gear. So I'm not 100% sure that we are going to get the angle next week. But, you know, at the very least, you need to have, I mean, if nothing else, how do the Death Riders not go out there next week and at least not have, like, a vote of no confidence in this man? Like, there's legitimately, if they come out next week and there is no indication that there's any sort of hostility or bad blood or questions that they have for Moxley, then, I mean, they're taking what should be a very basic story to tell and they're completely fucking it up. Only one way for this to go. And you either kill Moxley dead in one night or you slowly build to it. But either way, this is the beginning of the end of the Death Riders. And this needs to be the end. As far as Moxley and Darby, that story, as far as I'm concerned, that story is now over. There's nothing else you can do here. You know, other than the eventual redemption of Jon Moxley. But with Darby and Mox, that's it. The story has been told. Darby beat him in October, and now here in November, he was on the team. He didn't factor into the finish, but he was on the team that beat the Death Riders. What more can be done? So I like the finish. It was exactly the right finish. I like that they went with Kyle in that spot because he and Moxley have had a couple of matches on TV recently that, you know, Moxley was this close from losing. And so Kyle finally gets that big elusive win, which, by the way, was the biggest win of his AEW career. Easily the biggest win of his career. And you get Kyle O'Reilly out there. He's pouring blood. The guy's a diabetic. Fucking blood pouring down his face. Like, that is the top moment for him so far in his AEW career. Maybe the peak of where he will get to in AEW, but it was that moment for him here tonight in this main event. This one went even longer than the women's match. This one went 54 minutes, and I don't think it needed to go quite that long. A good majority of it, you could cut out a decent chunk of the match and still tell that story and have a strong match. So that would be my only, not my only criticism, but kind of like my main criticism as far as the length of the match is concerned. There was a lot, like in the first half, it was just rinse, repeat. You know, we saw a lot of that in the opening match. There were people in this match when Yuta was in there and Garcia's in there, like nobody cares. They're not over. You know, so nobody cares. Nobody's really reacting to what's going on. So there was nothing terribly interesting or exciting about that. But then in those last, like, final few minutes, that's where it picked up nicely, and then we got the finish. I like the finishes of both of the matches. It was just a bit of a chore in this one to actually get there. The Darby fire spot was obviously the big spot of the match here. Darby's a fucking nutcase, so of course he's going to be taking a spot like that. He has said, like, he was asked in an interview recently, has there ever been a spot that you wanted to do that Tony Khan and AEW said no? He said, yeah, I wanted to get hit by a car. And I'm almost positive they actually did do something with him once. Didn't they do something where he got hit by a car? Maybe I'm just imagining it, but I thought it was involving the Death Riders too last year before he disappeared. But that's like the one thing he has been rejected outright for, like, oh, I want to get hit by a car. They're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. But he's been thrown down the stairs multiple times. He's been set on fire. He's had almost his fucking ear ripped off. The match, Sting's retirement match, right? That crazy bump through the glass off the lat. Like, he's done some dumb shit in his career. Tonight was just par for the course as far as Darby Allin is concerned. Kyle O'Reilly, I would say, was the MVP of this match. Unless you want to go with Darby for the fire spot. But that was a big spot for him to be in. I think it is safe to say that this match here that we got in the main event will be the most violent double ring cage match that you are going to see here all month long. And we have two more left in the other place. But this one here, you're not going to find one that's bloodier and more violent. If that's right up your alley, you got it tonight. There ain't going to be another one that's going to come anywhere close to the level of violence and gore that you got here in this match. Now, next week, be aware, next week is a 3-hour combined Dynamite Collision episode. It is the go-home show to Full Gear, and it will also be the return of Kenny Omega. So that is coming up next Wednesday. Take a look at the Twitter. This will be a very interesting Twitter poll here to take a look at, because it was trending positively when I checked it before, and it still is now. What did you think of Dynamite Blood and Guts? 64.4% thumbs up, 35.6% thumbs down, with almost 1,000 votes in. So this is a thumbs up show, according to you guys. You can vote, as always, as you know, on X, at Solomonster. Mark says, all Mina does is lose. Well, brother, that's why I said Tony and Mina have to win those tag team titles. Darby is checking Amtrak schedules as we speak. Going to do a stunt where he has somebody tie him down to the railroad tracks. Is that what he's going to do? Oh, man. We got bland, dried chicken and turkey. Man, I love the maximum carnage during that women's blood and guts match. Marina Shafir is my MVP for the match. I love the grit from the AEW women. Yeah, I mean, I thought as far as them going out there and trying to make an impression in that first match, I think they knocked it out of the park. They did what they had to do. You know, you watch a match like that, you expect blood and guts. Again, if it were up to me, I don't think all of the blood that we saw tonight was necessary. But it's blood and guts. So you're going to get blood. You're going to get all, like, you know what to expect going into it. You can't go into it and go, oh my God, I can't believe we had so much blood in this match. Like, yeah, no shit. It's AEW. They bleed every fucking week. Now you literally have a show and a match with the word blood in it. You know what to expect. It says Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Mina Shirakawa, Timeless Tony are more tougher than Mercedes Moné. Those women shed blood for AEW. Well, Mercedes has a lot of titles to defend. She can't be going around bleeding everywhere and getting hurt. I was watching that match holding my breath because we have her coming in on Saturday. I'm like, please don't do anything too crazy in this match. We have a big match coming up this weekend at HOG. Also, a lot of Negan references during Blood and Guts, with a lot of appearances from the barbed wire baseball bats. Lucille must be jealous. I have a barbed wire bat in my closet, thanks to our good friend Oz and Glorious. Thank you, Dried Chicken. Seed, do you agree that none of the women in the Blood and Guts match are better than Io Sky? Io Sky is arguably the best wrestler in the world right now. So it would not be an insult if I said that I thought she was better than them. But you got a lot of very talented women in that match. I'm not going to say anything to knock them. I do happen to think that Io right now is the best in the world. She's just that good. The Moldy Cheeseburger Ricky the Dragon Steamboat looks like he can still go. One more match out of that legend. He had his retirement match. Leave him alone. Let the man rest and enjoy his retirement. One more match out of him. And how the hell did Sweet Cinnabon, Mina Shirakawa, get the proverbial Crimson Mask in the Blood and Guts match? I don't know. I didn't see how it happened. It's like Roddy. When he got busted, they said it was a chair shot. I'm like, okay, if you say so. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett, says, Dear Joseph Stewart, bring those geek questions to me. As you know, Solo may not be fully knowledgeable on all of those questions. I would love to chat. Solo is all-knowing. Don't be knocking Solo. Solo's very knowledgeable. But there you go, Joseph. You got another friend here in Chris. Chris says, which actor would you love to invite? To do what? Would I love to invite? I mean, that's pretty open-ended. I could think of... an actor I would love to invite out to dinner. Anne Hathaway. I would love to go out to dinner with Anne Hathaway one night. Have some conversation. Devil Wears Prada 2 is coming out soon. If the question is what actor would I love to invite, you know, into a dark alley so that they get jumped by a band of thugs, that might be a different person. What actor would I love to invite to my birthday party? I might have a different answer for you. I mean, it just depends on the situation. How did you feel about Kyle getting the win tonight? I thought it was very intriguing, especially after everything that's going down before this match. I think it made a lot of sense. Just given his recent history with Moxley and the matches they've had, I wasn't expecting it, but it did make storyline sense. I don't know about you, Solo, but to me, Gabe Kidd needs to get his. He's got some receipts coming to him big time. He should have some receipts coming to him from Eddie Kingston, but we haven't had any interaction between them yet. Do you still feel that Toni Storm and Mina are a favorite to win the tag team titles? Yes, I believe they are going to be the first women's tag team champions. As a fellow Michael Myers fan, how do you feel that Busta Rhymes is the only man to go toe-to-toe with Michael in a fight? I think it's a disgrace. The worst movie out of all those original non-zombie Halloween movies. Sucks. G. Barry Free, no idea how Hobbs is walking. Dude, he fucking bounced on his ass. He's a big guy. He bounced. He'd be lucky if he didn't break his tailbone. That was brutal. Arabian Knight says, good fucking luck to WWE's women at War Games following tonight. Well, they have certain limitations that the women did not have tonight on this show. So it's a little unfair to... Not that you're knocking them, but it's a little unfair to even compare the two matches because it's just two different... When it comes to the violence and the blood, it's just two different products. I'm sure Rhea Ripley, are you kidding me? Rhea Ripley, if it were up to her, she'd be out there, she'd be covered in blood. Tuxedo T-Servo, congrats on 18 years. Thank you, brother. You've been here for a good chunk of them. Oz and Glorious, Megan Bain, the woman that you are. Congrats on the big 1-8, Solo Monster. Hit that like button so we don't have to wait until the end. Well, you don't have to worry. We're at 4:11. So we have secured Be the Booker. One round. The Mount Vernon Kid, are you a fan of these movies? Armed and Dangerous and Ridley Scott's Legend. Legend, I did not see. Armed and Dangerous, yes, I am. Oz and Glorious respectfully requesting a Scott Hall, you want a war, you're going to get one, super chat. Eh, maybe. I don't know. Nothing really special about that one. Chris says, Solo, Powerhouse Hobbs bouncing off his ass like when Mario gets burnt in Super Mario games. It's true. G. Barry Free. Also, I sent the chat in a couple of streams ago campaigning for a DPW and Hog show. And since DPW announced they are suspending shows. Oh, since then. Yes, since then they have announced that they are suspending shows, which is sad. But there's a few indies that have made similar types of announcements. Ricardo De Jesus with a $10 super chat. Thoughts on Deadlock Pro going on hiatus soon? It's a company that had great roster of talent, and seeing it go away hurts any up-and-coming wrestlers hoping to gain traction. Yeah, I mean, it sucks. It sucks whenever a big independent promotion like that goes away temporarily or permanently. I mean, who knows? They're on hiatus. That doesn't mean they're done forever, but PWG has been on hiatus for how many years now? You know, if you're going on hiatus, you're probably not going to be running shows anytime soon. And it sucks, but you know what? It opens up other opportunities in that area. What was that, North Carolina? It opens up opportunities for other people. Hopefully they can slide in there. Pick up the slack. Bender McSimpson, you talked about Claudio's position in AEW last week. I think he is in a great spot. Always in the upper mid-card / main event, gets time to put on great matches, and occasionally gets big wins. It's probably the best he could hope for, honestly. He's not going to be the world champion. I think he is in a pretty good spot. He's in a better spot in AEW right now, honestly, than he would be if he went back to WWE. You can't tell me that if he went back to WWE, he would be in a better spot than he's been positioned in right now in AEW. Oz and Gloria's worst move, Claudio's uppercut or Eddie's back fist? The back fist. That back fist that did not connect against Big Bill still lives rent-free in my head. Defined Real. We was at the show live. The women's match was awesome. The men's match was better than it had every right to be. And Hangman versus Hobbs was exciting. Yeah, Hangman and Hobbs, again, it was just pretty much nonstop action. They brawled into the crowd, did some big spots. It wasn't meant to be this like 25 minute let the heel get, you know, heat on the champion and champion makes his big comeback. It wasn't that kind of match. You know, it was pretty much all action from start to finish. So I mean, that was fine. And I give the edge to the women's match. Better finish in the men's match, but I give the edge overall to the women's match. I think I enjoyed that one more. Justin G says, for Solid Monsters, $3.99, for Solid Monsters Red Bull on the combined show. Yes, oh, I can't wait, yeah. 3 hours next week, yay. I love those three-hour shows. They're so much fun. Rhythmic Intelligence with a five. Ricky Steamboat's nickname was fitting tonight, since that segment was Dragon On and On. You earned that one. Devin from NJ2000, what span of years was WCW's golden era? The golden era of WCW... There's a lot of really quality stuff from 92 and 93 that you should not sleep on, but it certainly was not the golden era business-wise. So the golden era for WCW really is, I think, 96 to 98. Or if you want to say early 99, you could say early 99. That's basically, you know, it's like a 2.5 to 3 year period. No more than that. And also, what's better than eating a mandarin? Eating Amanda out. Good night, all. A mandarin, Amanda out. Clever. See, Devin's leaving on a high note. He's like, I can't do any better than that tonight. Amanda in, Amanda out. Thank you, Devin. Thank you, brother. You did good on that one. And we hit the goal. We get one round of Be the Booker here. We should book our own Blood and Guts match. Did I see West Side Gun in the front row? Was he in the front row? I didn't notice. I don't even know what he looks like. Well, good for him. Apparently, he claims he was kicked out of Raw earlier this year. This may be the only show he's actually allowed to go to, so good for him. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
All right. One round, we got to make it a good one. Maybe we'll do... I'm not going to do it with the tag teams. I'm considering it maybe with the men and the women. Let's do a tag team match first. We have Batista and Rey Mysterio. I forgot that they were buddies at one point. That's right. You were supposed to be my friend when Batista went heel. You were supposed to be my friend. Rey and Batista against Penta and Phoenix, the Lucha Bros. Poor Batista. He's the only one in this match that's not going to be able to do a Rana. He can't do any high spots. But how about that? Rey Mysterio on one side, you got Penta on the other, and Rey Phoenix on the other. How's that for a tag team match? Not bad, I would say. Not bad. Okay, we're going to do a women's blood and guts match. We're not doing 6-on-6, though. We're going to keep it 5-on-5. So let's see who is going to be on team number one. This might be the first time we're doing a blood and guts. Now, I'm going to need your help here in keeping track of all these names. But on team number one, we have Bayley. Joining Bayley, Io Sky. Joining Bayley and Io, Emma will be in Blood and Guts. So we have Bayley, we have Io, we have Emma, we have Asuka. Actually, that's Kana. That's Kana the Murder Clown, but we'll call it Asuka. So we have Asuka, Io, Bayley, Emma. What do we get? One more? Tiffany Stratton. Bayley, Tiffany, Asuka, Io, Emma. Those are your five. Yeah, some of those names are in War Games, yes. All right. Now we have team number two. Now I want you to remember all those names. Asuka, Io, Bayley, Emma, Tiffany. So that's team Bayley. This is, oh my goodness. This is going to be team Bull. Bull Nakano. How about that? We're going to have Io and Asuka on one side, and we got Bull Nakano on the other. Team Bayley and Team Bull. Thank you, Justin. Justin, very efficient. Writes the names out in the chat. All right, Bull Nakano, we have Zarya. Man, what a team this is shaping up to be. Uh-oh. Wait a minute here. Hold on a second. Now, wait a minute. This is not allowed. Not in this situation. We cannot have... I am not going to allow this. I am not going to allow this. We have landed on Io Sky for the second time. Io cannot wrestle herself on opposing sides of a blood and guts match. So we're gonna spin again. We have Bull. We have Zarya. Are you fucking kidding me with this? Are you kidding me with this? I think B the Booker is trying to tell me something. You know, if I would have left it alone, we would have two EO Skies on the same team. How many EOs are we going to have in this match? I don't know what to do here. I mean, I'm going to try again. We're going to try this one more time. If I land on her again, I'm just going to count it. I'm just going to count it. We have Bull. We have Zarya. We have Maki Ito. I was just putting my notes together on Maki Ito, getting ready for the big match this weekend. It's Maki Ito against Shayna Baszler at the House of Glory show. I'm very excited to call this match. Very excited to be bringing Maki Ito in for the first time. The fired idol. The unemployed idol. She's no longer with Tokyo Joshi Pro. She's a free agent. I think we'll sign her up here for Be the Booker. Okay, so Bull, Zarya, we have Maki. Maki motherfucking Ito. Okay, we got a lot of Joshi talent here in this match. We have Gail Kim is in this match as well. Very talented Gail Kim. And we have one more. Natalia, rounding out the team. So to recap here, on team number one, we have Bailey, Io Sky, Emma, Asuka, and Tiffany Stratton. And on team number two, we have Bull Nakano, we have Zarya, we have Maki Ito, we have Gail Kim, and we have Natalia. So I put it to you guys, who wins? I'm picking the team that has Io Sky on it. Io and Asuka, like, that's your winning team right there. I feel like Kana the Murder Clown in a blood and guts match is just, it's just perfect. It really is perfect. We have one more. One more blood and guts match. Demon Balor will be the captain of team number one. Okay? I want somebody to write this down. We got Demon Balor. We have Muffin Man is with us here. Very angry CM Punk. That's two members of the Raw roster right there. Balor, Punk, fuck you. What is going on here? Demon Balor for the second time. No. I said no. There we go. Samoa Joe. Maybe get Punk and Joe on the same team. Punk and Joe and Balor. Man, what a team this is shaping up to be. Broken Matt Hardy. And the final member of team number one. Oh. Ryback. Finn Balor, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Matt Hardy, and Ryback. This is wide open for team number two, honestly. If team number two can really knock it out of the park, I think they're going to get the edge. Oh my God, that's right. Punk and Ryback on the same team. I think Ryback is going to turn. Punk is going to be crawling over for the tag, and Ryback is going to just be like, fuck you, and just drop down off the apron. He'll pull a Bad News Brown and just leave his team and walk out. Punk and Ryback, can they coexist? Ugh, God. We have Team Tyrus, the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion. The Funkasaurus, yes. Tyrus is the team cap. Well, I already know who's winning this match. I mean, this is already done. John Moxley, who surrendered in Blood and Guts tonight, is back in Blood and Guts yet again. Well, he heard the word blood. Of course, he wasn't going to miss out on this. Funk is on a roll. Somebody call his mama. You can't skip having multiple EOs but keep Tyrus. I only landed on Tyrus once. All right, Tyrus and, who did I just pick? Oh, Moxley, right. Karrion Kross also will be on the House of Glory show this weekend. Although this is, he's Killer Kross now. Forget Karrion Kross. We have Killer Kross. Killer Kross, John Moxley, Tyrus, Christian Cage. Randy Orton forces Adam Pearce to add a stipulation to your match. No. We have to add another stipulation. It's going to be a Blood and Guts plus one. Those are the rules. We have to add a second stipulation to this match. How is this going to work? We still have to pick one last team member. How is this going to work? It's a Lion's Den match. A Lion's Den Blood and Guts match. It's like putting a hat on a hat. We have a cage within the cage, but which ring does the Lion's Den go into? Or maybe you have the Lion's Den outside the cage. So anybody who tries to escape, they end up in the Lion's Den. With Ken Shamrock taping up his fist, putting his gloves on and waiting. That way maybe people will actually stay inside the fucking cage. If they know that they have Ken Shamrock waiting for them in the Lion's Den. Yeah, you guys are getting a Lion's Den Blood and Guts match. We just created a new match stipulation that has been unlocked here. But we still have one team member left. Now let's recap who's already on this team. You see the vision. We have Tyrus. We have John Moxley. We have Christian Cage. And who is the other? Killer Kross. And we have from Lucha Underground. You might know him as Ricky Banderas, but this right here is Mil Muertes. And, I'm sorry to say, but I think their goose was cooked the minute we landed on Tyrus as the team captain. I'm not really feeling this match. As far as who would win, I think the choice is obvious. I mean, the team that has Samoa Joe, CM Punk, they're picking up the win. So the women, they win out yet again. The women's Blood and Guts wins out for the second time tonight. Look at that. Art imitating life. Team Demon wins. Finn Balor, Punk Joe, Broken Matt, Ryback against Tyrus, Moxley, Kross, Christian, and Mil Muertes. In the first ever Blood and Guts Lion's Den match, there is not another stream on the internet where you will ever, ever It could be a 2K25 stream. You will never hear about that match combination ever again in your life. And maybe it's for the better, but you will never hear about that ever again. Only here. We made that happen. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the review. I'm glad we were able to unlock Be the Booker tonight. We will shoot for the bonus goal again on Friday. Still got that RSPW rewind dangling there. If you guys want it, we'll have another goal coming up on Friday. Friday is SmackDown. We get the next two matches in the John Cena Last Time Is Now tournament. Are you guys excited for The Miz against Jey Uso? I can't wait. And then in the other match, we have LA Knight, who is going to be wrestling a mystery opponent, which I'm sure is going to go real well. I think things are going to work out for LA Knight. You know what I think the outcome is going to be for LA Knight? I think that's what's in his future. But we'll all find out together on Friday night who the opponent is going to be. Oh, man. I may have to drink. After last week's SmackDown, I may have to drink before the show on Friday. Leopoldo with a 5. Shafir was Baszler circa Chamber tonight. W. Mox tapping. She should go on a tear, win the women's title, and just make Mox tap, cry, and kick him out herself. So Marina Shafir is like, I'm tired of you being a fucking loser, and just kicks John Moxley out all by herself. Hey, as long as it ends John Moxley and the Death Riders, I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. Roderick says, Nick Nemeth is my guess for LA Knight's opponent. Nick Nemeth will be on the House of Glory show. Nick Nemeth against the Amazing Red. How's that for a match? We got a big show coming up on Saturday. Hopefully I will see some of you guys there. If you're going to the big event expo in New York, we are working in conjunction with the big event. There will be a ring set up in part of the building where the big event is taking place for our show later that night. We got a bunch of big names. You want to see Shayna Baszler? Someone mentioned Shayna Baszler, Maki Ito, Killer Cross, Nick Nemeth, Mercedes Moné, Desmond Xavier, the former Wesley from NXT, who never should have been released, is going to be showing up and showing out on Long Island this weekend. So anyway, hopefully I will see some of you guys there. Duff's Vids with a 499. I don't mean to get emotional, but when I put the car in reverse, all I think is, this takes me back. Sky Blue looks good in red. Yeah, Sky Blue went from Sky Blue to Blood Red here tonight. She may need a blood transfusion. Maybe Kyle Fletcher can give her one. Be well. Stay safe. I will see you on Friday night for the SmackDown post-show, which after last week, I don't know what to expect. We'll all find out together. So until then, take care, guys.